Thanks very much. It's a really a great pleasure to be here, and I'm conscious of time, so I'm sort of going to whiz through and talk to you slightly differently. I'm going to tell you why we should all care about diversity and inclusion, and I'm also going to tell you a little bit about what we've done at UCL. So first of all, I'll introduce myself and a little bit of what I do for my day job. I have this very, very interesting side hustle in diversity, but actually I'm a trained scientist and I do science all the time. So basically we have what we've called molecular envelope technology, which was developed in UK academia. We've spun that out into a company. And this technology is all about creating medicines with reduced side effects and improved efficacy. And we've won some awards. The Royal Society of Chemistry gave us an award a few years ago. We work to create some drugs for pain, for allergic conjunctivitis, for retinal diseases, and also we convert drips into tablets. And we've out-licensed a number of assets to companies on the NASDAQ. We're working with Big Pharma and also working with Little Pharma. And we're running our own clinical trial at the moment. So that's sort of introducing me. Now I'm going to talk about why we should all care about diversity, because some people will wonder and think, well, should we care because it's a social justice issue, or should we care because actually it's good for society? I hope at the end, when I finish talking to you, you'll agree with me that it's good for everybody. So I'm not a diversity practitioner, so I rely on other people's data. And here's some data here. That if you have diverse management teams, they tend to be more innovative. And this is ESRC research. If you have diverse juries, they tend to be superior in their decision-making because they rely on the data. And I always give the example of when we're sitting around talking to people who we know very well in our families, and we can talk very, very authoritatively about the people on Strictly Come Dancing, the people we don't like. We don't have to provide any evidence, and it's fine to have that in a family situation. But when you're thinking about other people's lives, you rely on more on the evidence. And if you are very different from the people in the room, you scrutinize the evidence more. Ethnically diverse teams, they price stocks more accurately. We've all seen what's been happening. I mean, I looked at I'm a member of the investment class at the moment. I mean, I used to be on benefits 30 years ago. So I think that's amazing. I looked at my portfolio in Fidelity, it's 20% down. It's not my fault, I haven't done anything. I just put my money there. But I just hope that I have a very diverse team pricing the stocks. And public companies, if you have an ethnically diverse board, they tend to be more profitable. There's lots and lots of data that's showing that actually if we have ethnic diversity and gender diversity in decision-making roles, we have better outcomes. And we're all worried about, some of us are academics here, I worry about my citations, even though I'm told they don't matter, but nevertheless, I put my H index there so that people know, you know, how much I've written about. And if you work across geographical boundaries and you work across ethnicities, you tend to get more citations. That might be interesting. And if you live in an unequal society, such as the UK, where we have oligarchs storing their money in £12 million flats on the River Thames, and we have people in the north of our country unable to eat three meals a day without having to go and beg for food in a food bank, then you actually have more societal problems. So it's in our interest to get rid of these inequalities. And you may say, well, I'm at the top of the tree. I mean, I'm a middle-class woman. Why should I worry about people not eating? But actually, if I go out into the street and I'm clad in my fur and decked in my diamonds, and there's a beggar down the street, I immediately have a lot of anxiety, fright or flight. And so it is in my interest to make sure that I live in a society that is not as unequal as the USA or the UK, and maybe a little bit more like our Scandinavian cousins, because you have all these societal ills. And we know that we had a lot of deaths during COVID, and these deaths were more likely to be people who were poor, people who were Black, or people from Bangladeshi heritage. And as they died and the coffins piled up, we spent more time in our house on Zoom, even though we wanted to get out, and we had a longer lockdown. So it is in our interest to care about inequality. What's the reality? This is the reality. Ali has sort of told us a little bit about these numbers. But when you look at what's happening in UK academia, and we are talking about research, we can see that there's reasonably good participation from all ethnicities in UK academia. It's about 2% of UK academic staff are Black, about 4% with the recent census, about 4% of the UK population in England and Wales is Black. And so you then look at what happens when we think about being a professor. When we think about being a professor, well, you're more likely to be a professor if you're white, you're less likely to become a professor if you're of Asian heritage. And actually, I mean, the numbers do show up because there are more than five people that are professors, but you are really, really very, very unlikely to become a professor if you are a Black individual. So that number should be 4%, but it's 0.7%. And then if you happen to be a female professor and you are Black, then actually this is a very small minority of individuals. And I always joke that actually all the female professors in the UK, they can fit in my house. I don't have a very big house. There's about 45 of them, about 20,000 professors. So you can see that there is a real problem in the system. Anyway, I think that this all stems from the fact that we have an education system that's not fit for purpose. And I present this data to show you this. In the very beginning, when a child is about 11, Black and white pupils are performing at the same standard when it comes to English, mathematics, and science. Pupils that are of Chinese heritage are outperforming white students, and pupils that are of Indian heritage are also outperforming white students at 11 years old. When we get to the A-level time, and Ali mentioned it, if you want to have a research career, it's probably a good idea to try and go to a research intensive university. And to do that, you need about 3 A's. At UCL, we do reject people with 4 A stars in some courses because they are so competitive. So you need about 3 A's to stand a chance. 11% of pupils will get about 3 A's. But look at what's happened to the Black pupils. It's down to half that number, less than half. So they've been destroyed. As far as I'm concerned, they've been destroyed by our education system. It's not fit for purpose. It's definitely not serving their needs. Pupils of Chinese heritage are still doing well, as so are pupils of Indian heritage. But they get to university and they spend 3 years. And the gap that pupils of Chinese, British pupils of Chinese heritage, British pupils of Indian heritage have built up disappears in 3 years. They've had that advantage over a decade. It's gone in 3 years. I also think that our universities are also not fit for purpose. They're not serving this group. And then look at what's happened to the Black pupils. Really very unlikely to get a good degree. There are some improvements. I've put the recent numbers in, but there's still a huge gap, about 17%. In our system. So when you send your child to school at 11 and they're performing just as well as their white peers, bear in mind they're going to be damaged. And when they're damaged, they also can't command a good salary in the workplace. So if you go into the workplace with A-levels, you do have a gap with your white counterparts. But by the time you get a degree, the gap in your income is even larger. So, you know, I spent many an evening discussing with my 4 daughters and really persuading them that they should go to university. I wondered whether I should have, if they're going to end up having a worse pay rate. Let's look at research. So this is UKRI data. And sorry, I've taken it from their booklet, so it's very, very small. But I've sort of drawn a red ring around Black PIs. They don't figure in the graph. I mean, I've been a PI and I've had funding from UKRI for 2 decades, unbroken. But as you can see, it's very, very unusual. So Black PIs, you manage to get through the system, you manage to get your A-levels, you get into university, you're so fortunate, you get a good degree, you go on to do a PhD, or you're less likely to be funded, and then you're less likely to be funded by UKRI. Governor of the Welcome, the story is the same. But we're doing something about it at the Welcome. In actual fact, we've announced that we're going to be doing positive action. 2 grants, similarly ranked. Those of you that have sat on grant panels, there's always a very, very good at the top, very, very bad at the bottom. But in the middle, there's this sort of grey area of all these grants that are all sort of ranked the same. What we're going to do is when we see that situation, we will go for the underrepresented group. So we need a race equality strategy across our whole education system. We need to make sure that schools are rewarded for eliminating any type of award gap, and universities are rewarded. And I think we should publish the data. We should publish the data, because when everybody can see the data, people will start to take action. At UCL, we've done a number of things. I see some of my colleagues are here. We've got a race equality charter. It all starts from the top, articulating from the top why this is important. What we say to people is, if students come to UCL and they actually walk away with a worse degree, they'll go to King's, they'll go to Imperial. If they're not coming for your course will close down and you'll get your P45. That's what will happen. So it's in your interest to make sure that pupils get the degree and the award that they deserve. We've done quite a lot of things. We had, you know, conversations around the video of George Floyd and the murder of George Floyd, and the fact that the video of a man dying was circulated for all to see, which I find completely very unusual. But we've had some impacts. We have a Center for the Study of Race and Racism. We've got rid of, and I'm very proud, we've got rid of the names of eugenicists. We had people in our buildings who said that Black people were no better than baboons, but their names were at the top of the buildings. And students had to walk in there and sit their exams. Over half of our students at UCL are from ethnic minority backgrounds. We have found that some faculties have diminished their awarding gap year on year. We've done a lot of work around that. And we've also found that more people from Black, Asian and minority ethnic groups are promoted into the senior grades. And this is a hell of a lot of work all condensed on one slide. But I'm going to leave you with this and tell you why representation is important. And some of you are aware of this particular study. This was a very, very high profile study where 1.8 million neonates were studied and their outcomes. And what they found is that a Black neonate was half as likely to die if that Black neonate was cared for by a Black physician. So what that means is that we do need representation. We need to train people in our universities of different complexions and from different socioeconomic groups, so that we don't have the problem we had during COVID, where we had poor people dying, Black people dying, and Bangladeshi people dying. And we also make sure that if a neonate is born and a neonate is Black with complex medical issues, that neonate, if they're cared for by someone who thinks that they look like them, we'll have a better chance of surviving. Thank you very much for listening.